down to brass tacks, you are on the air.
Good morning, Joanne.
Good morning.
How are you this morning?
I am very good. What about you?
I'm pretty good. And I'm telling you, Mommy all right?
Mom's good. Thanks for asking.
Okay. All right. Good. That was my friend, huh?
Is.
Now, listen. You have this program. I don't know what sort of medication you take this morning. But you are on a good path. I don't know if it is being done deliberately or if it is being done before you have any knowledge of. Now, let me say this. You dealt with, as a Christian-minded person, the same-sex marriage or the same-sex relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And as a Christian, and like a person who read the Bible, the Almighty has already condemned that relationship already. You know how we condemn it?
How?
It cannot reproduce.
Mm-hmm.
Good? So I said, talking about it, the Almighty said, look, we make man and we make woman. Mm-hmm. If you're going to that, I don't want no more of you all. So if the two of you all go in a relationship, like any two women, mm-hmm. when it can't produce nobody, the genes could go to anybody else unless they go and put mixed up. If it's a man with a woman.
Does it bother you a lot, though, these same-sex discussions, or you're okay with it?
I don't go into that yet. That's true.
So you're uncomfortable? Okay.
Because they tell you the Almighty decided and he rules out there and the penalty.
Okay.
So it makes sense talking about it because I can't reproduce. Good. Now, let me go on. Yeah. From the time I heard it this morning, I said, look, yeah, I'm going down this road. Then you made your presentation about large debate. Now, let me look at the two candidates pertaining to the debate. My people, there are two new candidates. As far as I understand, people asked Mr. Reefer to be their representative. Did you hear that?
No, I don't know how that took
George
place.
North asked Floyd to represent them. The other candidate was selected by the Prime Minister, and she is running now. Now you're talking about debate, so they want to put it down to pieces. Floyd Reefer, people trying to make believe that Floyd Reefer cannot speak. He's not intelligent enough. The very school you made mention of this morning, Lodge, he was a pupil at Lodge. He's also a university graduate. Then come out of basic politics. It does not, as you said, being a good talker do not make you a good representative. Now, let me say this. Everybody know that if I was based in Barbados and you leave Barbados 30 years ago and was living in Canada and you did not come back to Barbados, you don't have the same feeling as the one who was in Barbados all the time. Now, Floyd Reefer spent his professional life traveling the world as a cricketer. You have the present BLP candidate, who was based at the trade union movement. She would have known about certain things happening in Barbados. But Floyd Reefer would be get or fear because he's not an idiot. The fact remains that representation does not mean you got to speak well. And if you look at it, let me look at what just happened in the Turkey love affair. Neil Rowe beat Chris Sinclair. Would you say Chris Sinclair and Nero is any comparison in debating? You heard Chris Sinclair for years. We had Kirk Humphrey, beating Ferenda Stewart. Who could debate the best? Who knew the knowledge of the philosophical moorings in Barbados and the development between Kirk Humphrey and Stewart? All of this nonsense, I call it political nonsense and grandstanding. A representative, we had people like Homi Corbyn, Lloyd Smith, and all them people that give proper representation. You mean you're telling me no? That when you remove your cabinet members, that they were not good enough to be cabinet members? That's where you take them.
Hold on. Okay. Let's go down a better road, please.
But no, I get down the road.
Otherwise, the public will not hear you well.
Now, let me repeat myself in a different format then. Glenn Clark said in a newspaper that she chose the best ministers to run her cabinet, and he was absent. But I say now that wasn't said, that was like reading papers. And when you're speaking in terms of having certain people, it also lay an insult to St. George's people that they're not careful enough to choose somebody to represent them from among themselves. You mean because they had a secondary school in St. George's for a long time that the people in St. George's can't choose a candidate, that you got to bring somebody and put them on them and tell this who they put you to represent you? You mean St. George's people ain't good enough? Like we got St. Thomas people, got St. DeFord, all in St. Philip, everybody right now trying to choose a candidate from...
A road that
we,
but the producer here on the show, we really have to, if you want to wrap up and generalize, because this thing of, you know, we're not here to pull down or even to big up, if you want to put it that way, future ministers, candidates, MPs, if you want to put it that way. So let's not go down that road. Generally speaking, the people of St. George North are the ones that have to choose their representative, and they will choose in the end. And we do welcome your comments in a general way, but let's not get personal here about the individuals, and we're going down our own road. Down to Brass Tacks, you're on the air.
Good morning, Miss Higgs.
Good morning.
A little earlier in your preamble, you had posed the question as to if persons had any concerns relating to the most updated protocol.
Yes, I said that there's something that is being tweaked, as I realized the most recent update was October 9th, and I believe that come December you may see even further updates and tweaking of that document as we get an increase in tourists on the island.
I want to share some of my concerns with you, Missy. I take exception to the part where it's the persons traveling from medium risk countries will be allowed to mix up with the general population of Barbados between their first test and their second test.
Let me just pull the document, make sure we're right. This is the low medium risk countries coming into Barbados that they would be able to proceed, get their baggage, and proceed on to their hotel, etc.
With a negative test. So my thing is, since it's a requirement by the government that people get a second test when they're coming from a medium risk country, I kind of think it gives the impression that they suspect there might be at least a possibility that the person might be positive the second time around. And therefore, to be safe rather than sorry, I think the best thing for them to probably do is, well, in the best interest of the country, would be to restrict the movements of those persons between their first test.
It says they're very, very low risk countries.
I'm not there yet. I'm getting to that one. I'm on the medium risk.
Oh, okay. Right. Sorry. I'm sorry. It's not the medium.
There's seven.
Low risk.
Upon arrival, medium risk country.
Right. Okay. I got it.
Right. I'm getting to the very low risk country part. But I'm not there yet. So in the medium risk country, you have to get two tests. It's mandatory that you get two tests. Mm-hmm. The first test is up to 72 hours prior to travel, and then the second test would be four to five days after the first test. Not after coming to Barbados, after the first test. So my point is that I think that they should quarantine these persons between the first test and the second test. Since because you're saying that the second test is mandatory, it means then that there's the impression that there's a possibility that the second test might be positive. So if the second test is positive, it means that the person would have had the chance to spread the virus to persons that they would have been mixing up with between the first test and the second test. Now, I also take exception to the part of the protocols which say that the travelers from medium risk countries would be monitored for COVID symptoms via telephone calls and text messages. Who's to say that these persons will be completely honest with their temperatures? And I'm not casting aspersions on anybody, but we've had instances already, even a few days ago, where we were told that people were breaching the quarantine. So if people would breach quarantine where there's supposed to be some level of security outside the building, what will stop them from lying to the monitoring team when the team calls to inquire about the temperatures? Because it's not like you have somebody actually inside the room with you to say, shout out, oh, he lying or he telling the truth.
So, well, here's where legislation will have to come into place and laws, because as the CMO says, and I'm not aware of it, and maybe it happened. I remember a couple of months ago, I spoke about this and said that in the same way we had laws for going off the road before a period of time. The curfew, my apologies. I just had a little memory slip there. The curfew, we had legislated that, and we should legislate in terms of making a law stating that if you break quarantine, which I understand obviously is one, because the CMO is on the back page of today's paper stating exactly what will happen if persons break quarantine, so they can't do it. There's punishment now for it.
I had moved on to talk about the monitoring, the team. There's a part in the protocols, I'm still on medium risk, where it says that the team would call you or text you to find out about any onset symptoms, like the onset of any symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
So in this part, you will have to be honest, like you will have a temperature gun, and you have to take your temperature, and you will also have to tell them like if you're coughing or sneezing and that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, if you're coughing and sneezing and that type of stuff, the second test that you get, I don't think they would allow that second test to clear you, right? So what I'm saying is that if you could tell them a temperature that is not really the temperature you have, or if you could suppress your coughs and sneezes for the purpose of the telephone call, or in the case of a text message, the one here, anyhow, it means that when the second test comes, and we know that the second test, because it's coming so quickly after, you might not have enough virus load in your body to cause the test to show up as positive. I'm saying, therefore, that this whole thing about monitoring people over the phone and via text messages is not good, because if people will go as far as to break quarantine, I don't see why they wouldn't. Well, what will make them be completely honest about giving the, being completely honest with their symptoms and also with the temperature from the gun? Now, I also want to move on now to the high-risk countries, persons from the high-risk countries being allowed to leave quarantine in as little as 2 days after arriving to Barbados. Went from past experience right here in Barbados, across the road too, but right here in Barbados, we've seen that it's entirely possible for people to test positive way after the 2 to 3 day period. So only 2 weeks ago, JS put out a notice about three people who tested positive for the virus. And out of these three people, it took 10 days for one of those persons to test positive. Then it took 9 days for the other person to test positive. So if people are testing positive for COVID-19 almost 14 days after the first negative test, then I would believe that common sense would say that.
Applied sense. But before you go on, I'm reading here, and it's subject to interpretation, I guess. For me, it means travelers will be required to retest 4 to 5 days. I'm on medium now. After the first accepted negative test. It doesn't mean, in my opinion, after you got that test. Because you could come here with something that was fake. In other words, 72 hours, you come, and then it has to start from when they accepted this legit test.
No, mistake. Accepted by the protocols means that it is a valid test. So once you come, so in other words,
that's why I'm asking you. I'm saying it's subject to interpretation, right? I'm just saying that it could be after the first accepted test, counting the time from when the officials here accept it to be legit test.
So I can just try to explain it to you, Miss Egg.
Mm-hmm.
Accepted test in this instance, and I'm telling you this for a fact, is not something that I manufactured. Mm-hmm. Accepted means it's a valid test. So if you come into the country, and when you come into the country and you produce your test, they actually, I've heard the CMO and others say that they check the test to make sure it's valid. So once it's valid,
they're counting from the 72 hours then.
Yes, correct. And that's what I explained to you earlier in the call, that the accepted test counts as far back as 72 hours. So let me say that your test is on Thursday, and you take your test on Monday. The second test that comes 4 to 5 days after is not 4 to 5 days from the Thursday that you arrive. It's 4 to 5 days from the first test which will be in this hypothetical situation Monday. So that's what when the protocols say accepted, they mean valid.
But can
so
I say this? If it is that you're negative, right? I mean, unless, because so that we don't confuse the public. You're negative on the Thursday. You traveled 72 hours. You're asked to quarantine 4 to 5 days. Clearly, if you were exposed at the airport or on the plane, doesn't the science say that between 4 to 5 days, I'm not swearing for it because, I mean, I'm hearing different things when people were tested negative and 9 days later, as you just said. But does the science support that if it is in your body to that extent, 4 to 5 days is the time that you may need for the retesting?
Okay, so Missy, the point that I was making to you actually when I went on to talk about high risk, the category high risk, I was actually going on to explain this point before it was, you know, before you interjected.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is that the science says and CDC as well says that the generally accepted principle is that the virus load that I spoke to you earlier about sometimes does not present itself enough. And there was actually a lady that came onto the program a few months ago and explained this as well.
Mm-hmm.
That the virus load, if the virus load is not enough, then the test would not say that you're positive even though you are positive. So the generally accepted principle is that you weigh at least up to, I would say, a minimum. And even the BAM, Barbados Association of Medical Practitioners, in their six-page PDF document that was going around a few weeks ago.
Would the sharing load not be would be low too as well? In other words, spreading it. If the virus load...
No, because if you are positive for the virus, but you test negative, that doesn't mean that you can't spread the virus because the virus is spreading.
No, I didn't say that you couldn't. I ask you if the spreading, the risk of spreading, if it is just as low as...
No, I do not believe that the risk is reduced if you test negative when you are positive. So this is the reason why everybody is telling the government that 4 to 5 days testing, the second test, after the first test is simply not enough,
mm-hmm.
and that you need to give them a little bit more time. Because, good that you've answered that question. Because then it further proves my point about the high-risk country is that if you test negative, therefore, on the second time,
mm-hmm.
it means that because you are now allowed to leave quarantine completely with no monitoring at all, by the time the virus then builds up, you're already in the society spreading the virus. So even if, let me go with your belief that you cannot spread the virus when the count in your body...
No, it wasn't my belief. I was asking, I'm putting it out there for someone to respond.
All right, so let me pretend, which mm-hmm. I don't think is true. The science doesn't support it, but let me pretend that it is so. Then you're actually supporting my point indirectly without knowing it, that because with the protocols, when you're coming from a high-risk country and you get your second test 4 to 5 days after, which could show a false negative, it means that by the time you leave, by the way, the second test will allow you to leave quarantine completely, no monitoring, no testing, nothing. It means that by the time the virus then fully builds up, you can then still spread the virus anyhow.
Okay. So basically, in a nutshell, sir, what you're saying is it should be 14 days of quarantine,
right,
and not the 4 to 5 days, period.
I agree. Let me just go to my last point now about the very low-risk country. Because you mentioned that earlier, and this is a very, very concerning one for me. Because very low-risk...
You got 1 minute to wrap up. Go on.
All right. That if you're coming from any country on the very low-risk category, it means that you don't need no testing at all. No testing, no monitoring, nothing. And China is on that list. Same people that mm-hmm. were telling the world that there was no problem is on that very low-risk category. And then low-risk now, you mm-hmm. just come with one negative test, and you're allowed to leave the airport. No testing, no monitoring, nothing. So if that first test was a false negative, mm-hmm. it means that you can spread the virus to the general population of the country.
All right. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you for your contribution. That caller, because persons are responding and saying that, you know, COVID-19 is here to stay. I don't know if it's here to stay. I hope not. But truth be told, we can't get angry at the caller because people are scared. There's some people more scared than others. And he's just concerned. And he wants to see the protocols improved. And it is his right to make that call. But I think the government in Barbados, I think they're doing a They're doing the best that they could do, I think. And they've been commended by others, how they've been managing it so far. And I said so far because we don't know what's going to happen. To me, the whole problem with this pandemic, and I know it might be too late to say this, but I said it before, I'll say it again, I should say. You can't fight a pandemic, one country doing their own thing and another country doing something else. It's a global pandemic. And when world leaders get together for their meetings with United Nations on climate change and making all these decisions to save the planet, one would think that they would have gotten together early February, January, to decide how the world was going to tackle this, at least the majority of the countries, and let us move, sing it from one hymn sheet, using the resources that each country has access to, given that countries are, some are better off, more better off than others. But I felt that that should have been done, and China probably should have been shut down a little bit earlier, but you know, the horse out of the stable already. But I'm saying that this may not be our only pandemic in this century, and lessons learned. If something like this happens again, maybe the world leaders can make an agreement that that country be shut down immediately so that others can help. And we care more about the planet, it seems, which is important because we need to care about the planet, but we're not caring about ourselves. And if we care about ourselves, we would wear a mask, we would wash our hands, and we would do everything that we're supposed to do to save our lives. If you don't want to save somebody else's, save your own and wear a mask. But I said that to say this, you can't fight a pandemic by yourself. And it's sad that the whole world did not get together with the leaders to make some decisions, including that with the airlines, so that we could all move and get rid of this thing, you know, once and for all. Down to brass tacks, you're on the air.
Hello, morning.
Morning, first female caller.
Yes, Diane, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
I am fine, thank you.
Good.
My point I am trying to get at today, I am not this politically think person, but listening to the program, not every day, no, but I have been here, I'm from St. George too, but I am not from the North.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I'm hearing, I don't know if I'd be right to say that right now, but DLP supporters, most of them I would say,
mm-hmm.
Calling it and speaking on the things that Glenn Clark did and whatever, whatever. But that road that they're talking about leading from Newbury to Market Hill, that road was not like that all before 10 years ago. I mean, if as they say, you know, they have all this idea of what should have been done in St. George North, when the Democrat Labour Party was in power for the 10 years, all those things they should have done then. Because if they're not saying it now. They shouldn't be saying it now. They should be saying it when they were there. So don't say that Glenn did not do this and Glenn did not do that. Because he tried, I've heard people from that constituency say the things that he has done for people. So just don't just get down on him every day, every day, every day. And every day they're kind of talking about this thing. I'm going to be finished. I know I'm not from that country, but I'm going to be glad when it's done and over. So whoever the people put in, amen to that.
No, people's choice.
Yes,
that's all it boils down to, the people of St. George North. But this is politics for you.
Yeah, I know that.
But I'm hoping it changes, though. I'm hoping that in 2030 and onwards, that we see different types of debates and how we... I think we just speak to the issues and we talk about our opponent's ability to be able to carry out the mission of the people. I don't like the... It gets a little too personal and you have to have a really thick skin to get into that arena.
It is so true.
And it's unfortunate that people will insult you from to what you have on to, you know, but that's...
You know, thank you.
So it's sad.
It's so true. Then when I heard you say this morning that, you know, don't continue to call the person's name.
Don't.
You know, and yes, speak, yes, my opponent. As you
my
said,
opponent.
My opponent.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, if they continue to call, you're just hearing the other person's name, and that's the name that you remember.
And that's, listen, and then you, and if you weren't keeping abreast of everything and you just remember that name, that's where you're going to put your ex. with the name that you keep hearing all the time.
All the time.
So it's important for them. I mean, like I said, this is just free advice to both. It's good to just talk about what you can do, what you can do better, what you can bring to the table, more so than the other way of doing things. PR is PR, whether it's good or bad. Public relations is public relations, and you're giving, you're putting people on the front burner more so than yourself. And and that's so important not to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's like going, it's going to be, when it's over, and we will see what whoever is in will try to do or will do.
What is your position on having debates? And I know you said you're from St. George, but not St. George North. Is that something you think is necessary for people to do in this day and age?
It could be, but if you're not comfortable, with it. But it's something that can happen because you're not gonna meet everybody when you're going up canvassing or when you're having meetings. Everybody's not going to meetings, but when there's the debate, you know, everybody is to see, you know, or hear what he has to say. But if they're not,
it's neither. If it was you voting, it's neither there or here for you, whether they do it or not.
Or not? Yes. Okay. Honestly.
How do you make up your mind when you're voting for a person? I'm just curious because people just do it based upon what somebody looks like, what they have on, a smile. You know, what do you look for when you're putting your ex, if you do?
I go personal.
Really?
Yeah, I go personal.
Mm-hmm. Not party.
My family belongs to
a particular party.
I would not say any party, but I go personal.
So if that person is not a nice person and they don't do anything and have a bad track record, you still voting for them?
No, I would not vote at all.
Oh, you wouldn't?
Yeah.
Wow, it's interesting. So basically, when you don't put your ex, you got to take wherever you get.
Yeah.
So which means you don't have a voice then, because people may say, look, you didn't put on your ex, so you really shouldn't say anything because you didn't make a difference.
No, but it only happened once. In my lifetime. Okay. I'm not a young person, but it only happened that is when Richard Beyer and Louis Tal was voting. That was personal at the time. So I did not go voting. That's the honest truth.
Well, I think it's really, really important for people to get out and vote. I mean,
it really is.
I think there's a campaign going on in the States now about the importance of, I think it's called VOMO, vote or miss out. And they're not pushing towards one candidate or the other. They're just trying to tell people, get out and vote. And it's important because you have a right to choose who you want to represent you. I don't think people understand. This is your life. This is your life. This is your child's life, your future. Be careful who you put in charge, who you vote for, because it means... It's the difference between you living and suffering. In my opinion, you make bad choices, you got to live with it for 5 years.
It's so true.
So people have that power, exercise that right. And you know, when I hear people saying, man, I ain't gonna make no difference. All of them is the same. But you know what? I don't think everybody's the same. And I think that one person will emerge that will make a difference. And I'm seeing it. Whether it's this party or the ones before, there are a couple of people. History has shown me that they govern different. They made a difference. And there are a lot of people that have made a difference, some of them no longer living. So I'm not putting all politicians in the same pot. I think there's some people out there who actually do care. And I hope that they find the right person for St. George North. I want to thank you so much for your contribution. Down to Brass Tacks, you are on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Mistake, am I on now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I am calling from in New York, all right? I'm not Alvin, I'm not Leslie, I ain't trying to run the program, but you guys are going to have to find a way to ferry out the long-distance calls so that the wife don't kill me when she sees this phone bill. Because it was on hold for quite a minute now. Anyway, forget that. Somewhere I read... I'm speaking relative to the debate. the upcoming debates if they do come off. And it was said that it was reckless and it was irresponsible to call a by-election in this COVID environment, since the people, you know, would be reluctant to attend public meetings and stuff. I read that online in, I think, one of the dailies, if not Barbados, the Daily Nation. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was creative to come up with the debate forum, which I think should give a voice to all the candidates who have thrown their hats into the ring. So now to come back and, you know, poo-poo it, it seems to suggest that somewhere, somehow, somebody's bluff got called. That is how I feel about that. Mm.
No.
Okay, well, let me move on, because the other thing that has really got me all riled up is this thing about the same-sex union.
Why did I think that was going to come out of your mouth?
Because I want to speak to him for just a minute.
Go ahead. Go ahead. Feel free.
Here's the deal. All the way back in, I believe it was August of 2018, the story broke where in Pennsylvania, I think there were better than 300 priests were found to be guilty over a number of years of the molestation of better than 1,000 little children.
Mm-hmm.
Children who, by the way, cannot give consent.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember what I was taught at school, there are a number of denominations that seek to tell me and tell you and tell others that they are all worshippers of one God. However, thunderous was the silence that followed that story. But to come today to try to impose your will on consenting adults speaks to the height of hypocrisy.
Well, you can consult with me and then I will consent. You can put it that way.
I understand. But I'm just saying, right, uh-huh. It rises to the height of hypocrisy. And that is the problem that a lot of the outside here got with the churches. Not only in Barbados, all over. They paraded in the cassocks and the collars. All right? 300 of them. A little girl was impregnated. This is news. This is not I make up, no nothing. This is news. She was 14 or something like that there. All right? And thunderous silence followed. Not one person from these denominations that knows to walk into people's bedrooms and try to tell them what to do.
Mm-hmm.
Then I had a word in English to say something wrong.
Well, I put out there, and I'm still waiting for the call. It's now 11:36, and I'm hoping between now and 2 o'clock that someone would call and tell me why it is that they oppose it and to leave God out of the equation. I want to know personally for them, how does it impact them? How would it impact them to same-sex unions decided that they want to have a relationship? I would love someone to call to tell me how it impacts them personally and have that kind of conversation, because I can't think for them. I'm just saying for myself personally, what two people do in the privacy of their home, two consenting adults, is their business. And we need to see churches come out a little silence. Domestic violence, gun violence, child molestation, things like that that really impact in the society. And I heard one priest say recently in Barbados how when people encourage that type of practice, how countries don't perform so well and link it to the economy. I'm yet to see how that is linked.
Look, the arguments that you are hearing, they are insulting to your intelligence if you do a little bit of reading. All right, I heard somebody, I believe it was Munda, try to link it to bestiality and all this nonsense.
Ooh, okay.
You know,
thank God I didn't hear that.
Everybody is entitled to their own opinion. All right? I hold my opinions real strong. That's just who I am.
But when you hear them...
I don't fight the body players.
When you hear Christians, and I have respect, I have a lot of Christian friends, various denominations, and this is not being said in any disrespectful way. So, but when a Christian comes and says, well, God said, and I'm like, okay, well, God said it, you didn't. So if it is that God has given man the freedom to choose, then let him choose and then let God decide if that is for him to do or not to do. And let me just make sure that I'm clear. I'm not saying choose to do whatever you want to hurt a person. Because things like murder, rape, etc., those are things that man, and we have laws, have to protect people against persons who would commit those types of crimes. But once something is happening and it does not impact you, it doesn't hurt you, it doesn't violate you, how does it become your business? You know, I just don't understand it. I just can't.
Where I am lost, because I all know, all right? And I know, I've gone to school with both males and females. And you have a discussion with them, and there are persons that were born with such inclination. Who am I or who are you to judge them? If a person was created as a hermaphrodite, where do they belong? Kill them then? Is that what you're telling me? Is that what you're telling me? But it is the hypocrisy that it rises to that bothers me. But if these same people were to go into the church and drop a dollar or two in a collection plate, a boy don't refuse them. That is my problem. That is my problem. But I know you're going to hell and a law you're going to anyway. But Ms. Hayes, let's be honest with you, because when the lady see the phone bill, she
wouldn't want to hear now that you've been divorced. And then you have to ask Dennis to send you a plane ticket.
She's telling me that she's the only boy that married a politician and still poor. That I thought she could put down in the phone bill. She didn't want bill, but hey.
You have a good one and stay safe in New York. Down to Brass Sacks, 11:40. You are on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Ms. Joy.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm good. You got my name right. You said Joy. You normally call me Joanne.
Joanne, yeah. I have been listening, and I decided I was going to sit out by then eventually.
You couldn't help. All right. That's all right.
I want to tell that last caller that, that he would not, the wife would not be the only person to marry a poor politician. No. There's some questions we see since George North by election. And I hope that these questions will be answered before. The major one is the debate. Let me go from the start. I am not in favor of the debate. And it does not have anything to do with any political affiliation. It has something to do with the concept. Now, there is a gentleman by the name of Alex Mitchell, who has who intends to win. He's paid his money in, but he was told by somebody from the media, Bezam, whoever maybe, that he's not qualified to be on the debate. I find this extremely difficult, whether he's a favorite or not. As long as he's paid his money in and there's going to be a debate for the candidate, then I believe that he should be entitled. That is why I'm saying that I believe that the whole debate should be run by the electoral board and not by no party or by any group of people. So I am opposed to that, and I hope that the decision will be made early, because I read where he has paid his money, and he was told that he's too late and his money would not be adequate for him to become a member of the debate team. Why are you opposed to Williams? I'm opposed to debate because I believe that it should be done the right way. That is by the electoral boundaries people. And that in so doing that the people will be free of any the media, yes, but again, the media is questionable.
Really? How so? How so, in your opinion?
In my opinion, there, if you trace the history of the some journalists in Barbados, you'd find that they've got political affiliation and they've got repaid for something they've done in the course of their journalistic life. Either that they get put on a board, or either that somewhere along the line they're appointed to some position. So somewhere along the line, or they become the PR person for that particular party or person. So the journalists and Barbados have identified all along.
And that is based on affiliation and not qualification?
That is based with affiliation. Qualifications does not come because some of them say they've been involved in the area too long and nothing has been developing for them. So they have to at least affiliate.
No, but what I'm saying to you is when people get these picks and you said that some journalists are associated with this, is it that they get it and they're not qualified to do it? Because I think there's a difference between giving someone a pick that not qualified and giving someone something that is qualified to do
it. If I want to go from the top, I will come back down to the bottom. So I'm going to go from the top and say that there have been journalists in this country who have played with the political system in their lifetime. Some journalists have died and some are still alive.
Mm-hmm.
Who has been repaid for the services they've rendered to the particular organization of which they have been involved.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a known fact. I can call 10 off my heart here who has gone to the great beyond, but who was paid for the services to that particular party of which they was affiliated. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't believe that there's a need for a debate. I'll show you my area of opposing. One guy says, one of the cats says he will, he's angry. He would like to be in the debate because he will get exposure. Exposure, he needs to get out there and pump in the people's houses and understand exactly what he's doing more so than trying to use the debate for a form of exposure. What I believe happening, and I believe that somewhere along the line, that if the debate should be done, I would like to see an independent body of responsible Barbadians involved in this exercise, more so than the Journalists of Barbados Association. There are many Barbadians who are independent, who has no political affiliation, but obviously would be able, even from the parish of St. George North, would be able to qualify themselves for asking the questions that would be necessary.
Mark, what do you think about, I said it earlier, about little town hall meetings?
A town hall meeting because of COVID, that is...
No, I mean following the COVID protocols. I'm not saying to have people sitting close and so on, but if you have small groups, you know, when people knocking on doors is one thing, of course, that's the old school way and it continues to be a good way. They have these mass meetings, that's all right, but little groups, if you don't want to do the debates,
I believe that.
How would the town hall meetings be better at that?
Hope my answer will be correct. I believe that they should be given the facilities of Zoom.
Mm-hmm.
And that within the very, let's say the town hall that you're talking about, the little centers across the parish.
Mm-hmm.
We're 20 and 15 and 10 people with us. This goes, that even outside of the parish, this equates that people can view and watch. So my feeling about it, I think that a town hall meeting, giving the candidates the right to work with Zoom.
Well, Zoom and face-to-face, because you can have at least a small group in the room spaced out, as well as a Zoom happening.
Perhaps I may be foolish in saying I'd rather the Zoom and nobody in the room, but they'd be talking to hundreds of people in the various communities across the parish. The idea about this is that if you made the jump to become the candidate, then you have to be affiliated with the requirements of that parish. Now, the town hall meeting, I've heard somebody define the town hall meeting that the individual from the party who cannot speak or the lady who cannot, that there can be a replacement. That town hall meeting entitles the party to submit some person in between there to talk party policy. I don't think this is fair. I think that in fairness to the whole exercise. Now, all through the years, Joy, we have had elections in this country, and we have never brought the elections down to debates between the candidates in the respective parishes or constituencies. We've kept the debates at the level of either the campaign manager or the leader, or you see, and the debates stay at that level because the person or persons will talk exactly about what they want to see the country become. Now, I believe that this is a similar event for St. George, but it cannot be broken down with a bunch of journalists who in Chumunfa, and I have no axe to join with against the journalists, but I'm saying that this is a serious situation. This is the future of a constituency and the future of individuals who have decided to run in that constituency, and it should be done fair, and it should be done so that the person can say, well, I did not win, but somewhere along the line, everything about this exercise is fair, in my opinion. No. But to take it to the level where you have no candidate, where you're placing advantages and disadvantages against people. The disadvantage that I spoke about just now is that Alex Mitchell has not been allowed to take part at this point in the debate.
Mark, we're going to have to leave it right there. I don't want to thank you, as always, for your contribution.